Could you expand on this idea of the different turns in policies?
Yeah, I think China take quite a number of turns. The PRC was founded in 1949. For the first 30 years, some years, government focus on, of course, economic development was important, but they focus on, for instance, human security. Not everyone have secure life, even though the living standard is low. Another, I think, main focus was in egalitarianism, equality. Some later argue this kind of a policy was at the cost of economic growth. Even though economic growth rate in the first 30 years was still 6.5%, which is pretty high compared to most of country in the same period of time. By end of its first 30 years, China was still poor. Many people still living in absolute poverty, perhaps 250 million, perhaps 300 million people still living in the poverty. They're equal, but equally poor. So in the next 10 years, starting from 1978, 79, in the next 10, 15 years, the focus of the government was on economic growth as such, at all cost. Therefore, we see economic growth rate in China very high, average around 10% a year. But in the meantime, the government neglect the issue of growing inequality and growing insecurity for many people, especially in terms of healthcare. Only in the last several years, I would say perhaps start from 1998 and 1999, the government began to shift again, this time focusing more on human security, equality. So we see another turn in the last 7, 8 years. So we see a number of dramatic turn in the last 6 decades, especially in the last 3 decades.
Would you agree to say that these turns had an impact on your research, and that your research is very much related to this?
True. I mean, as I said, my first research is historical. It's about the Cultural Revolution. That's the most dramatic events I personally experienced. And since then, for instance, in the 1990s, because of the growing inequality, at that time, the intellectual mood in China and the entire world, I think, it's very different. At that time, people didn't care so much about inequality. They only care about efficiency, economic growth. So when we first talk about the growing inequality, for instance, between rich provinces and the poor provinces, many people in China said, this is not a problem. This is a necessary cost for economic growth. So intellectual mood at the time is entirely different from, for instance, in the last 10 years. We have to fight very hard with those people. Many people have more senior than us in the important position of a research institute. So they said China have to sacrifice a certain degree of equality in order to achieve higher economic growth. So we have to write with a strong theoretical and empirical argument why it's wrong to pursue economic growth at the expense of equality. So fortunately, I think more people began to see the potential dangers of growing inequality and growing human insecurity. And collectively, the people at the bottom and also changing intellectual mood coincide with the policy orientation at the very top. All of those bring about the change in the last 7, 8, 10 years.
Okay. Could you now present your vision of democracy? Because there is a very active debate on the issue of democracy, its universal value or not, in China. And I would like to know, your own vision, since you have published recently a book called Four Lessons on Democracy.
Four lectures on the democracy. My view on democracy has also changed quite substantially. I grew up during the Cultural Revolution. My understanding of democracy back then was popular participation, mass participation. That's democracy. In the Cultural Revolution, there are some chaotic years, and I was not quite entirely satisfied with the situation. Therefore, my attention shifted to the West. I embraced the Western perception of democracy for quite a number of years, and that's one of the reasons I chose to study in the United States. I mean, the United States for quite long were perceived as kind of a model of democracy among many Chinese intellectuals. So for a number of years, I equated democracy with a competitive election. Very simple understanding. This is a still conventional understanding of democracy. Then I lived in the United States for nearly 20 years. I become increasingly dissatisfied with this kind of democracy. I see election can bring in and bring out politician, but the politician elected are not necessarily responsive to the people's desire, demand, and preferences. And that's not only in the United States. United States, compared to many so-called electoral democracy, actually is not that bad. I mean, in another part of the world, such as in the Asian Pacific area, and we know that a number of countries practice electoral democracy, but the outcome was not quite desired. So that's why I become increasingly critical of electoral democracy, or democracy based solely on competitive election. And that's also why I began to read more about the intellectual history of democracy. I realized democracy for thousands of years was not an associated election. Rather, election was regarded as a kind of an aristocracy or oligarchy. Only a selection of leaders by lot, by chance, by randomness, were considered as democratic. Before 19th century, most of the people who either critic or the support of democracy all understand democracy that way, not in the way we understand the democracy. And after some research, it's become clear the conventional understanding of democracy was not become widely accept or universally accept until perhaps 1940s when Schumpeter published his book Capitalism, Socialism, and Democracy. Only after that it became universally accept. Also, in the reading, I realized many people in the established electoral democracy become dissatisfied. So this has been the talk of the democratic deficit in UK, in Canada, Australia, United States, and many parts of the world. And people began to invent the new way for ordinary people to participate in politics. And there are many new inventions, institutional inventions. That's why my understanding of democracy goes back to my original understanding. The participation is important. The participation of the ordinary people is important. Not just elite, not just an indirect selection of a certain leader. More people should be involved in the whole process of decision making, not only choose the decision maker per se. So that's how my understanding of democracy evolved in the last 30 years.
Okay. In your last book and in a number of articles, you mentioned that democracy was a combination of responsibility, responsiveness, and accountability. Can you expand on this?
Right. I think in the conventional understanding of democracy, most people focus on accountability. accountability in the sense political leaders are elected by the people. If people are not happy, they have to be go. They have to be leave an office. I mean, vote out of office. That is supposed to be accountable in a sense. But we see in many countries, the political leaders are accountable, but they are not necessarily responsive to people's preferences. I can take the case, for instance, in the healthcare reform in the United States. The talk about the healthcare reform have been at least for 3 decades, and there's no serious change. Obama, and win the election to some extent based upon his promises to carry out the healthcare reform. But at least for 3 decades, the government was not quite responsive. Everyone knows the United States spend too much on healthcare, but the outcome is very poor compared to most of the OECD countries. So we can say American government is accountable, but not necessarily responsive. So that's how I was inspired by a friend of mine who also spent nearly 30 years in the United States teaching political science. And she mentioned the 3 important concepts: responsibility, responsiveness, and accountability are not necessarily the same thing. You can have a different combination of all 3. You could have an accountable government not necessarily responsive, or responsible government and not necessarily accountable. So all kinds of a combination. I'm still thinking about this all kinds of a possible combination. I haven't yet developed some kind of a theory at this point, but I want to move in this direction.
All right. Where does China stand right now? Can we still say that China is authoritarian? Is it a sufficient description, or can we say that it is more democratic nowadays?
That's also why I'm not. I want to have, as I mentioned at the beginning, my recent interest is to develop a new typology of different political regime. I'm not satisfied with the current understanding of democracy. I'm more dissatisfied with the current understanding of the term of authoritarianism. We use this label on many regimes, many countries, but those countries are different vastly. I mean, very, very different. We use the same term to describe them. I think this kind of concept then become analytically useless. Concept is supposed to be helpful for us to understand the object, but when we use the same concept to label many different systems, this kind of a concept become useless. So when we say China was authoritarian, I don't know what we meant. I mean, China was authoritarian 100 years ago, 80 years ago, 50 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago, and now. But China has changed a great deal. So this term is not quite useful. That's why I'm still searching for a term to describe the current regime in China. The many possibilities. Yesterday, one professor in the audience propose the pluralist structure, but the pluralist is again very broad, inclusive concept. There are many pluralist societies, but they are not necessarily the same. So to search for more process concept to describe different type of regime is my next research interest. So I haven't gotten a good label concept to describe China yet, but I hope I can do so 5 years from now.
Okay, I hope you can. One more question. You said that China has changed a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expand a bit on this idea? How has the Chinese regime changed, especially in the last few years?
Right. In China and elsewhere, many people say China have only economic reform, no political reform in the last 30 years. When they say there's no political reform, they mean China still haven't have a competitive election. So competitive election become the sole criterion for political reform. But it seems to me the concept of political reform should be more widely defined. Any shift of power balance is a political reform, is all political change. I don't like the reform, the term of reform, I more like the political change. So if we think of in the term of shifting balance of power in the political structure, there has substantial change in China in the last 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. For instance, the power balance of power between central government and local government, between government and the people, between different social classes, there have been sea change in the last 30 years. The term of political reform cannot capture the suddenness of the change. So I would say the central government, for instance, there's a huge degree of the decentralization of power. China, in many ways, is more decentralized than France. China is more decentralized in many ways than the federal system like United States and India. So it's hard to say China is authoritarian, centralized, even though this is still perception many people have of China, outside of China. So that's why I think we have to have it's a kind of a short of a language, a short of a descriptive term or concept. That's why we often use those inclusive, very sweeping concepts and put them on different system, and which it seems to me is detrimental to our understanding of reality rather than helpful.
Thank you, Professor Wang.
Thank you.